Hey everyone, this is Adam Mellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today, we are going to take a look at the fact that this upcoming solar eclipse in the sign of Aries, which is happening on April 8th, is also happening in a conjunction with Chiron. Now, you guys who watch my channel know that I'm not someone who really brings asteroids into the picture so often. In fact, I can probably think of maybe five or six times dating all the way back to the start of my YouTube channel that I've really spent time talking about Chiron or any of the other asteroids. Although I have frequently entertained guests at the Nightlight Astrology School, guest speakers on the topics of the asteroids, they've not been a big part of my practice. And I tend to have little rants that I go on about the overuse of asteroids. And I have some reasons that they sometimes bother me. It sometimes create the impression that I'm anti-asteroid. Anti-asteroid Adam. But anyway, I'm not. And we're going to talk today about what to look for or what it might mean that Chiron is engaged at the heart of this solar eclipse in Aries next month. And I think this will be useful because I've had a lot of people asking about this. And one of the things that is, quite common, really, is for those planets that are conjoined to any eclipse, lunar or solar, to play a really big role in the expression of the archetypes of that eclipse. And so why would we just completely ignore Chiron? A number of people have asked me that question, but like, are you just going to ignore it? No, I think it probably is important. But today, anyway, I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I think of and use asteroids. I'm going to tell you about some of the major Chiron and Aries significations. And then we'll have a separate video. We're doing a number of horoscopes and further treatment on the solar eclipse in Aries closer to the April 8th eclipse, at which point we will talk more about the specific ways in which Chiron and Aries may engage with the eclipse through horoscopes. Okay, so today we're just going to talk about the archetype of Chiron and Aries at the eclipse and what it might mean. And I'll tell you my thoughts on, try to clarify my thoughts on asteroids. Okay, anyway, that's our agenda for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe. Find a unique way of impressing your soul on the like button. And when you share your comments and reflections, tell me something about Chiron that I don't know. I would love to hear more about your experiences with Chiron, even though it is not my forte. I would love to hear more from you guys. You can find a transcript of any of my daily talks on the website, which is nightlightastrology.com. Guess what? Tonight, there is a special event happening, which I invite you to join me for, and that is a live webinar that I am giving on the topic of Neptune in love and relationships. If you go to my website, nightlightastrology.com, click on the events tab and go to live talks, you'll be taken over to a page that where you can register for Neptune in love. It's Thursday, March 14th. It's 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. When you register, you'll get a link that will allow you to join the live webinar. If you cannot attend live for any reason, you'll be sent a replay link that you can use to download and watch the video. It's $20 to register. It's a two-hour long talk with Q&A. Sometimes we go a little bit over. And what we're going to be talking about is, how does Neptune show up? What does Neptune have to say? What does Neptune teach us about love and relationships, whether it is configured to the topic of love and relationships in your natal chart, or if there is a transit of Neptune in or through the placements of the natal chart that is activating the topic of love? How do you work with this energy? What does Neptune do around love, sex, and relationships? So that's what we're looking at tonight. We're doing it as the sun is coming into a conjunction with Neptune, so pretty appropriate timing. I hope to see you guys there. It is this evening. It is not too late to register. Hop on over to the website, and hopefully we will see you this evening. The other thing that I am promoting right now, and you can stick around after today's talk to listen to an interview that I've been featuring with my wife, Ashley, and here is her YouTube channel, Sky House Herbs, if you want to go learn more about her. Her program is also starting up here at the end of April. It is her herbal apprenticeship program, which is back after a couple of years, revamped, ready to go. There's been people who have been on a waiting list for a long time waiting to get back into this program since she took a temporary break. And if you scroll down, you can learn more about it. And then there's need-based tuition, early bird pricing, and so forth. And if you stick around after today's talk, you'll hear an interview that I did with Ashley that kind of dives into what the program covers, what it's all about, what you know, what you'll learn and so forth. So you can stick around for that later. All right. Well, on that note, let us first turn our attention to the real-time clock so that we can illustrate this Chiron dynamic. And then after we do that, I'm going to tell you what I think about asteroids, kind of general, some disclaimers, and then I'm going to tell you about three significations that are probably the most basic and safe to sort of safe to assume about Chiron's appearance in this eclipse. So let's go ahead and put up on the screen. And I will tell you guys right away, there are certainly people out there who have more time and experience with Chiron than myself. And yet it's not like I am completely oblivious about Chiron. I've been a professional astrologer for 14 years, have read most of the major books written about Chiron from modern astrologers, have been to multiple lectures, have, you know, tracked Chiron here and there with some interest. But anyway, here it is. So we have that solar eclipse forming at about 19 Aries, and you will see that it is, I mean, it's happening like bang on, just exacto. So let's actually advance this by some hours so we can see when the planets all get together. You're going to see that, and actually if I can do it by minutes, they are exactly conjoined down to the degree and the minute of the degree. Look at that. I mean, so yeah. So, you know, when it was brought to my attention, because I don't usually even include Chiron in my charts, right? It's an object, it's a symbol in my toolkit that I rarely ever use. And that does not mean that I think that it's bogus or something like that, but it's just not one that I use very often. So a friend of mine, Alex Amorosi, in fact, my colleague, who comes on, he was like, have you been thinking about this Chiron conjunction at the solar eclipse in Aries? And I was like, really? I'm just being honest with you guys. I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. And certainly started thinking about it. Okay, well, gotta look at this. So anyway, I thought that this would be a fun thing to talk about, but because you guys are like, what, an asteroid? First, let me tell you how I think about or use asteroids, if I ever do. So I have to say, first of all, there is no part of me that thinks that Chiron is, well, I shouldn't, because I was born with Chiron on my ascendant within, I think it's about a degree. So I have Chiron natally conjoined to my ascendant in Taurus. So there have been many occasions where I've had the opportunity to reflect on Chiron as an archetype that's been very active in my own life. The archetype of the wounded healer, which is the simplest way that you'll hear Chiron talked about. Chiron was a centaur in Greek mythology who was known as an incredible teacher to many heroes. Chiron was skilled in things like medicine and warfare and astrology and astronomy. Chiron also suffers an incurable wound and sort of trades his life in a swap with the situation that Prometheus finds himself in. So there's a kind of Christ-like side to Chiron that's very interesting, and a teacherly side and an educated side. There's a bit of an outcast in Chiron. That's part of his story with his mother. There are many significations that have to do with wounding and healing and education and wisdom in not just the healing arts, but also military arts and something like astrology and astronomy. So as someone who, you know, while I was coming of age, utilized a magic potion, you know, an entheogen from South America to heal some family wounds and problems that I had with addiction, and then started through those experiences studying astrology and sacred astronomy, you might say, the archetype has been active in my own life, right? It's on my ascendant, literally. So my problem with asteroids is the same problem that I have with hermetic lots, or the same problem that I have with fixed stars, or the same problem that I have with minor aspects. It is not about the relevancy or the potency or the validity of any of these subjects or symbols. I am someone, and this is just the way that I work as an astrologer and the way that I teach. I don't like to clutter my chart with too many things. I feel like there's this an idea that I just disagree with, which is that more symbols in the chart means more truth. Like, you don't have an objective chart unless you have every single thing listed. I'm someone who's just really, you know, just gone kind of, I've been a contrarian when it comes to that idea, because, you know, I took an entire year plus to remove the outer planets from my chart from all charts I was working with when I started studying Hellenistic astrology, as a way of developing an understanding of the traditional planets that were not being colored or influenced by the outers. And what I discovered in that process was that there was nothing missing. There was nothing lacking. That doesn't mean that the outer planets don't have unique things to say, or that they aren't really powerful and important. And I use them every day in my practice now. But taking that time and pulling certain symbols out of the chart really taught me that it's not more symbols that leads to a more objective truth. And that is part and parcel of my view that astrology is a form of divination. So the way that I look at astrology is sort of like this. If I had to make an analogy with the tarot, I would say I think you could do successful divination just using the major arcana, or just using one suit of cards if you wanted to. That doesn't mean that using all of the cards is a bad thing either. You could use all of them. You could use a few of them. In fact, I believe that the similar idea would be like saying, I don't believe you have to use astrology, tarot, and I Ching all at once. You could use them, and I often do. But it's also not lacking. You're not lacking anything. You're not missing anything necessarily. There's not it's not like you're symbolically impoverished unless you're using all three systems at once. So that being said, I think that there are some people for whom using things like hermetic lots, fixed stars, minor aspects, asteroids, et cetera, trans-Neptunian objects, whatever, is like really appealing and really works. And the multiplicity of symbols, it works with your brain. It works with the kind of symbolic diviner that you are. And that's fine. That's a good thing, right? What I resist is the kind of modern astrological tendency to think, I don't have a complete set of facts about this person. I don't have a complete readout unless I include 30 extra objects, right? So that's the thing that I kind of push back against. I say, symbols are, there's the sky will speak about what's going on in a reading. Like when I sit down with a client, I have seen, you know, so many different symbols speak and so many different techniques speak over time and so many different systems of divination that speak over time in my life and other people's lives, that I just assume that it's not the symbols are the means by which the oracle speaks. And the oracle can speak to things very specifically, very powerfully, with direction and intelligence and predictive power or descriptive power or guidance and instruction, using a really vast, diverse set of symbols, or a really limited and focused set of symbols. So because that's the way I think about things, I resist this tendency that I feel like, we have to throw a ton of stuff into a chart. Because what I've seen is that for a lot of people, and I'm just being honest, you don't have to agree with me, for a lot of people, the overuse of symbols, using too many, is sort of like constantly flipping cards in the tarot, or recasting the I Ching when you don't get an answer you like. There's a way in which we use so many symbols, we can kind of get the chart to say whatever we want. And I like having to work within a somewhat narrower set of symbols to discover nuance and subtlety and interpenetrating symbolic relationships and commentaries that the symbols have with one another, which I feel becomes harder to do, at least for my brain, the more symbols are present. And if you're like a galaxy brain and you can do that, then fantastic, right? So it's not that I don't think that those symbols can speak. It's that I wonder why we think we need so many all the time. And I also wonder if it doesn't betray something of an empirical an unconscious empirical mindset. It's not objective unless it includes and accounts for every last thing in the sky. Well, good luck. There's thousands. You know what I mean? So I think of asteroids as divinatory exclamation points, or like little divinatory add-ons. Like my main set of symbols are the traditional seven and the outer planets. And that's not to say that I think those are the only good ones or those are the best ones. But the way that I use fixed stars, the way that I use hermetic lots, the way that I use Sabian symbols, the way that I use anything like that, including asteroids like Chiron, is if and when they appear really strongly in something that I'm looking at, like this eclipse. Oh my God, it is exactly conjoined down to the degree and the minute. Well, to me, there's ways in which if you just like, often one of the things that I'll do is when I'm looking at my chart, I will, not really with the asteroids, but for me, it's the fixed stars, which I think are like ancient version of the asteroids, honestly. I think the ancient world, like the modern world, was always looking for and noticing different kinds of symbols in the stars and in the solar system. Well, you know, when I notice that something is configured to Arcturus or Vega or Aldebaran or Algol or something like that, that's my asteroid practice, basically. And it's been developing slowly over time. And the reason it's been developing slowly over time is that I feel like I like to get to know symbols and develop a relationship with them. So I often track them in my personal life before I introduce them to clients or to YouTube. I just need a feel and a relationship with these symbols. What I don't like, what I resist, is that kind of modern tendency to be like, okay, here's what so-and-so said about Chiron. Here's what so-and-so said about Sedna or, you know, Eris or whatever it is. And now I'm just going to throw it into every chart that I look at and immediately feign like I have some understanding. Like it's just as simple as a list of adjectives that I can slap into a chart in a reading. So the other thing that I'm opposed to is people just slapping tons of things into charts without slowly, carefully developing relationships with the symbols, because the symbols were thought of in ancient astrology as the omens of the gods. Like they are, it's like a vernacular you're learning, or it's like going in and learning a specific dialect within a different region of the jungle or something. You know, to me, the inclusion of asteroids, like if there's any asteroid that I was going to really start including, it probably would be Chiron, because Chiron is on my ascendant and I have had, you know, numerous occasions to contemplate Chiron's presence in my own psychology, right? So, any rate, all of this is just to say that this is how I think of and use asteroids. I think that that doesn't mean that there isn't room for people to use them very differently than myself or have different ideas or opinions about them. But there's this misconception that I hate asteroids. I've seen this like around in the YouTube comments and like social media, like Adam the asteroid hater. And I don't. I think it's funny when someone's like, oh my gosh, I had a death and rebirth experience and it was because of Vesta. And I'm like, maybe it is. Maybe it is because of Vesta, or, you know, or like whatever other Juno or something. Okay. Have you looked at the possibility Pluto is conjoining your sun right now, right? And I'm not saying that both can't be true. It's just that I sometimes feel like we are so easily bored and lack focus, and we don't take the time to develop relationships with deep relationships with simple things like signs, houses, planets. And the more we do, the more we will find that, like, for example, I do this in my second year class all the time as we reintroduce the outer planets into the curriculum after taking them out in year one, just to get to know the ancient framework on its own terms. Year two, we bring them back in. And what I have people do is I have people look at a placement in the natal chart. Like, let's say, okay, you had a really difficult mother, you know, and, so we look and, in the natal chart, we find that the moon is in Scorpio in the 12th house. Oh, wow. That's there it is, right? There's a one placement that could be representing a difficult mom relationship, a fallen moon in Scorpio in the 12th house. All right. And then we bring in the outer planets And suddenly we discover that Pluto was also square to the moon when you were born. So my point is always, you see how the outer planet accents, highlights, augments the same exact delineation. And that's not to say that it doesn't also add its own unique flavor or depth or significations from some other part of the chart. It's just to say that often what you'll find is that if you take the time to get to know houses, signs, dignities, etc., there's multiple ways of getting to the same place in charts, always. There are always, like, you'll hear astrologers, in fact, talk about the rule of three. If you see the same thing in the chart three times, you really know it's a thing. My point is that it's a mistake to think that more symbols gets you to the truth. It doesn't always. And that's also not to say that more symbols means that all of the other stuff is irrelevant compared to just these things that I think are important. So anyway, I hope that this, I don't know, I hope it's interesting to hear what I think about asteroids, how I use them, or I really don't use them. But if I were going to use them, it'd be much like fixed stars, which is something that augments, enhances, highlights, deepens, qualifies, but they're not, for me, they're not primary. And that's mostly due to the way that I need to focus and deeply develop relationships with simpler things and then gradually expand. For example, I've been studying Hellenistic astrology and teaching it for a long time now. It's only in the past year or so that I really started incorporating the bounds, a little bit of the decans, and a little bit of fixed stars. And that was deliberate on my part. If you've been in any of my programs and people would be like, well, why aren't you teaching this? I'd be like, because I haven't developed a relationship with these things yet. And it's very important for me to have living experience starting to work with them outside of clients and YouTube. And then as I get to know them, as I feel like I have a relationship with them, I can start including them. At the very least, that's what I encourage people to do with anything, whether it's a Sabian symbol or an asteroid or a hermetic lot or a fixed star. Or anything. And don't underestimate the power of getting to know the signs, planets, and houses and dignities very, very deeply as a kind of first step. That's my advice, but take it or leave it. All right, now that I have gone on my soapbox and, hopefully that was interesting, let's talk about Chiron and Aries and some of the significations that may come up. I'm keeping this simple, although, again, I'm not a Chiron expert. It's not something that I use in my practice all the time. There are some very simple things that you could say about Chiron and Aries and the significations that Chiron and Aries is likely to bring to the eclipse being at the exact heart of the sun at the time. It's like a Chiron Kazemi, even though with objects like asteroids and outer planets, is it appropriate to say that they're Kazemi? I don't know, but at any rate, it's at the heart of the sun, an exact conjunction on a solar eclipse. I mean, that is something, right? So what do we think? Number one. So the one thing that I would say is pay attention to the dignities, always. So Chiron is in Aries, which is the temple of Mars and the exaltation of the sun. It's a fire sign. It's masculine. It's a sign of the vernal equinox. And a sign with Chiron that may incline Chiron toward things like healing or lessons in the martial arts. So this might have something to do, for example, with, I mean, quite literally could be Chiron and Aries could engage you in learning something about warfare, self-defense, you know, weapons training, hunting, like anything that's literally about learning more or becoming educated somehow in any kind of martial art would fit for Chiron and Aries. The other thing, though, that could come up very easily would be lessons or healing in the martial arts that have to do with psychological qualities that are related to Mars. For example, the building or development of confidence or strength or power or courage, all of which might have to be developed or cultivated through this eclipse and the cycle of karma that is coming off from the eclipse because you lack confidence or you lack courage or you tend to be afraid or you underestimate yourself, or you're not sure you're that strong, right? So this could be the Chiron signification to me at the heart of Aries is not totally different, by the way, from a solar eclipse in Aries. And this is my point, where it just sort of augments or amplifies some of the same themes that Aries tends to be about, like the building and development of confidence, assertiveness, strength, power, martial, any kind of martial influence, Mars influence. And there could also be healing involved around these things, or the exploration of wounds in relation to these things. So that would be the very first thing that I would look at, would just be like, you know, for example, getting a personal trainer, taking a course on exercise or nutrition that comes with an increased feeling of vitality, addressing lack of confidence, developing strength and potency, you know, all of those kinds of healings or learnings or lessons around martial things could be really amplified by this eclipse. Number two would be wounds or healing in the domain of Aries. So were you picked on? Were you bullied? Do you have deep wounds around self-confidence or self-esteem, which Aries, again, as a sign, tends to amplify the importance of? Whether you have the sun there or any planet there, one of the things that's often connected to the sign of Aries is the sense of becoming stronger, becoming more confident, rising up, facing challenges, sometimes even having to overcome oppressive or tyrannical forces that feel like they're trying to push you down, that you have to stand up to. These are Aries themes. Surviving, that's an Aries theme. And thriving, because you've found your potency. But there are wounds in these areas for us. We tried that once and someone abused us. You know, we tried to be strong at some point, but I don't know, you were on a trajectory. I remember when I was in college, I was on a trajectory for I played club lacrosse and broke my arm, and then I couldn't play. You know, I was trying to be a competitive athlete in college, but I got derailed by an injury. See, we all have wounds in this area of life where we tried to develop strength and fell short, or our confidence was totaled by someone, you know, abusive. So what are the wounds? What is the necessary healing in the sign that has to do with freedom, potency, strength of individuality, a sense of being able to overcome, persist, and survive difficult things through inner strength? Where are our wounds at in these specific areas in our life? Like, biographically, where have they occurred? How are we still living with them? And then simultaneously, what healing might start to present itself or come through as a result of this eclipse having such a close conjunction with Chiron, who's an educator and a healer and may amplify the importance of dealing with these wounds and bringing healing to them. All right. Okay, so number three would be to focus on healing lessons, wounds, and the healing of the wounds. So learning or lessons in the healing or martial arts, some kind of Aryan level of knowledge, wisdom, or understanding, maybe that has to do with healing others or healing ourselves. Sorry, this was a little redundant. And then the other thing would be healings in the topical places or houses of Aries in the natal chart. So the other thing you have to keep in mind is that in addition to the significations of Mars and Aries, a kind of martial Chiron element, we also have the whole sign houses. So when you're thinking about, the first house, it might be body. When you're thinking about the second house, some of these lessons are also related to the development of resources, money, etc. When you're thinking about it in the fourth house, you're thinking about home and family, right? Seventh, it's marriage. Tenth, it's maybe your career. So the topical area that this eclipse is located in, the Aries whole sign house of your birth chart, is also the topical area that will be brought up for review. You know, so that is what we're going to be looking at when we get to horoscopes, because that requires kind of going through all 12 whole sign houses, which Alex and I have recorded already for April. So we'll be doing that, and Alex will be adding his thoughts about that as someone who also works with Chiron a bit more than I do. My only claim to Chiron expertise is that it's on my ascendant. Well, conscious or unconscious, it's been part of my life. Now, the other thing that I would say here is that, remember, with eclipses, the healing, the learning, the education, the dealing with wounds in the Aries martial dimension of life, or the topical area of your birth chart occupied by Aries, does not happen all at once. A solar eclipse is the start of something new. And in time, that seed that's being planted will lead to the healing, the wisdom, the addressing of wounds, the insights that come from looking deeply at our wounds and having to learn and grow because of them. In many ways, people will always associate Chiron with the development of the knowledge or wisdom, and then the expertise that may also be cultivated due to the specific nature of the wound that you have. If your confidence has been wounded and you're entering into a cycle in which you may be developing it and strengthening your sense of individual power and courage in a healthy way, not an egotistical way, maybe there's something, some way in which that exact healing process will lead to your using that understanding in some kind of service or some other ability or skill or career path. For example, when you have to face the feeling of, I don't know, not being worthy or not being strong or lacking confidence or lacking a sense of individual strength and freedom, all Aries themes that maybe are somewhat difficult to, like, there's been some wounds around those things. If that's the case, let me just do this really quick. If that's the case, then could you end up through the healing of these specific issues, could you end up coaching other people, or could you end up having some leadership qualities that are now available to be used in some other area of your life? See that? And now one of the things I don't like about the way people talk about Chiron, because people talk this way about everything in astrology. Oh, you've been through a Pluto transit and it required, it required a lot of inner work. Oh, great. Now you're a shaman, you know, something like that. Hate that kind of thinking. It's like, just because you've grown doesn't mean you have to turn it into something that you're monetizing. But just because you've gone through something doesn't necessarily, not for everyone, does it mean that you're going to become a professional healer because you've had to do some healing. And I think there's sort of a stereotype about that with all astrological transits. But Chiron, to me, is sometimes the poster child for thinking that pain or difficulty, suddenly, if you've gone through it and done some good work with it, that suddenly it gives you a platform of expertise, or that you should monetize it or make a career or platform for yourself based on it. Some people will. Some people, their life will be called in that way. For a lot of people, though, the healing is meant to open other kinds of doors, and it won't be directly related to something you end up doing for a living, if that makes sense. So that is it for today. That's what I have to offer you guys. I hope that this was useful. And tell me your thoughts about asteroids. How do you use them? Do you use them at all? Do you not use them? Which ones have you found useful? I'd love to hear your thoughts about that. What else do you think Chiron and Aries may signify? I am, you know, not the world's most qualified person, again, when it comes to talking about Chiron. So add in your own thoughts and enrich this conversation in the chat box. I'd love to hear from you guys. All right, that's it for today. If you stick around, you'll hear that interview with Ashley about her upcoming herbal apprenticeship. Otherwise, I hope you guys are having a great day. And don't forget that tonight is the Neptune webinar. If you want to attend, pop over to nightlightastrology.com, go to the live events tab, click on the Neptune in Love talk, and you can register and come join us. All right, that's it. And we'll see you again tomorrow. Bye. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for sticking around. I'm really happy to be joined by my wife, Ashley, who is an herbalist. Hi, Ashley.
Hey.
And yeah, I'm really excited to be helping Ashley promote her upcoming program, which is something that you actually began teaching many years ago, this herbal apprenticeship program. I think it was, 2011 or 12 that it got started, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's been over 10 years I've been offering this course, and yeah, it's my favorite thing to teach.
Yeah. And just to be clear, because some people on my channel, most people know you because you pop on here or there. We talk about herbs and astrology. There's an attraction in our marriage and an attraction in the subject matter that is old. Like, we've been together for, you know, 14 years in our relationship going on. And we've always had a fascination with each other's areas of expertise. And we've done lots of things to marry them together over the years, in addition to literally getting married. And and actually, herbalists and astrologers have married the subjects of herbs and planets together for thousands of years as well. Now, your program is focused on, you know, herbalism. It's not an astrology course, but there is certainly a lot of overlap in terms of the energetics and the spiritual approach to herbalism that you take. And so I was hoping that we could start off just by telling people a little bit about the program. You're coming to this after taking a little bit of time on maternity leave. Our kids were not yet in school. Now they are. You're coming back to work. This is really exciting. The new program launches at the end of April. I'm going to put it up on the screen so people can see it. You can find it at skyhouseherbs.com. Enrollment is open now. The course begins. You go under Courses, Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship at the end of April. Tell us about it.
Well, this course, I guess my goal in redesigning the apprenticeship course that I've been teaching for 10 years is to make it even more personal and to allow people to study the material, digest it at their own pace. So what it's going to be is a combination of kind of three main parts. The first one is the recorded material. So there's going to be modules that will be released and people can listen to them as they, you know, as they have time. The second part are live classes where we will meet live on Zoom and talk about the module, I'll answer questions, I'll give even more information about it. And then the third part is the sacred plant pairings. And so I've always taught the herbal portion, like the plant diets, one at a time, but this year I'm going to do it in pairs because I think you can learn a lot by comparing and contrasting herbs. So for every module, you'll have two herbs to study and you'll get a little cheat sheet about them before you start the module. And then you'll have an opportunity to work with those two plants and blend them and keep them separate and just really work with them closely. Because my goal is that I want people to be able to find information that they can really use in their own lives, maybe with clients, whether they have a professional herbal practice or maybe they're a therapist in a different field, that they'll know these plants so that they can work with them really comfortably.
I love the different modules that you have, just so we can preview them for people. Module one is Vitalism and the Heart of Herbalism. Module two, Building Your Home Apothecary. They're so diverse. I love module three is my favorite, Plant Spirit Medicine, Energetics and Chemistry. You have such a holistic approach. It's what I've always loved about your teaching. You'll teach about the doctrine of signatures. You'll talk to people about how to communicate with plants, how to think of them as teachers that are living beings, that have personalities, that aren't just, you know, phytochemistry or whatever. But you will also teach phytochemistry. And I think that you have this really well-rounded way of helping people be intelligent about the plants, about the body, about the systems of the body, but also not afraid to use energetic systems, not afraid to take something from the kinds of energetics that ancient mystics were working with, whether that's the elements or whether that's, you know, some of the overlay with things like Ayurveda, Chinese medicine. You take what's useful on a symbolic and energetic plane and on a personal connection level with the plants, and you marry it to really smart scientific research. I think that that's rare. You don't see that a lot.
Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, to me, it's all language. They're just different languages that we talk about the same thing. And I think the more diverse our languages as herbalists, the more we can reach more people. And that's kind of my goal. Like, I want everyone to like be able to identify plants, use plants. So we need to diversify the languages we speak. So we can talk with our physicians. So we can talk with a therapist. We can talk with a mystic, right? We can talk with children. And we have a language that everyone can use.
You talk in the program, in your modules, you have stuff on digestive and gut health. You have stuff on detoxification, colds and flus, and, you know, dealing with virus seasons. You talk about tissue states, and you're talking about how to give things to your kids for, you know, helping them maybe at times even relax before bed at night. We use a lot of different things with our kids. I love this, that you have called this I'm going to find the phrase where you use that you use, and I'm going to mess it up. A community herbalist. What is a community herbalist, so that people can understand that definition? Because sometimes people might look at a course like this and think, gosh, unless I go to an accredited university for, 8 years and learn all about chemistry, I have no right or business suggesting herbs to people or using herbs. That's just not true. And that's not the history of how folk herbal medicine has been used or taught. So what do you mean when you say community herbalist?
I think you said it perfectly. This is the people's medicine, and our grandmothers and great grandparents used plants as medicine. There's nothing actually that like hard about the practice of herbal medicine. It's just getting to know the plants and getting to know the times when they're most useful. I really envision that this course, people can take it and yes, use it for themselves. Number one, because I think a lot changes when we have the personal experience, and then using it in your family, whether that's just, maybe making a tea for your dog, or, if you have kids, or maybe you just have a partner, maybe you have plants you can use, and we'll talk about taking care of a garden, but using it for yourself, for whoever's immediately around you, and then taking it beyond that, because it's likely that at some point, you're going to be talking with someone. They're going to say, oh, I've got this digestion thing and I've tried this and this. And they might say, hey, you're studying herbs. Is there anything that you would recommend? And you know what? You'll probably have a few ideas. And that, you never know how one way that you help someone out there in the world might trickle and then help others and more people. So I think through the self-knowledge and studying this knowledge in your own body, it'll naturally, it's like, impossible for it not to spread out and start to affect the broader community.
Yeah, I think that's really important. This is also for that reason, because we have a vision. I mean, you guys know through my Kickstarter, you guys helped us build a community herbal medicine garden that Ashley's been hosting free and donation-based events out of, that the donations go right back into the garden and just growing the medicine that we then find ways of harvesting and giving to other people or letting other people come and harvest. We have a vision, we always have, back to the days when we had our yoga studio in Maryland, we have always had a vision of making this sacred knowledge accessible to people. And that is both there in this program in terms of the way you're framing what it means to be an herbalist. It might mean that you're a professional and you see clients and you could continue beyond this program developing the skills to do that. This would certainly set you up for success. You could also go forward and be someone who uses what you know with friends and family and yourself. And that's an incredible set of tools to have. The program's also very accessible from both a programming standpoint and a price standpoint. I'll take you back over and show everybody. The programs, the modules are pre-recorded, but then you meet outside of the modules for discussion, community, Q&A, and sort of development and integration. So people can attend those live. If they miss those integration sessions, they can also watch the replays of those. So
absolutely, yeah.
Anyone could take this at their own rate, as slowly or as quickly as you wanted to, really soak it in or blaze through it. And, and then we can certainly, beyond this program, as Ashley perhaps makes more advanced programs available as she's easing back in out of maternity leave, can help you with further development or recommend you to many other wonderful programs where you can continue your studies. We want this to be accessible. We want community herbalism to be, as simple as being able to show a friend a couple of yoga stretches. We should be able to show each other herbs, and just, hey, this is a helpful herb to use. Also, accessibility price-wise, we have an early bird enrollment and we have a standard enrollment. And then we have tuition level one assistance and tuition assistance level two, which break out the affordable tuition into different levels of affordability. And you can kind of identify where you're at if you're someone who wants to take this program but needs to work within your means and not hurt yourself doing it. And then for those who can pay, we ask that you use standard or early bird enrollment. And that's the same thing I do for all my astrology programs. So we try to keep it super, super accessible. The Herbal Apprenticeship Program starts April 24th. I know Ashley's super excited to be getting back into teaching too. I also would like to offer Ashley just a chance to tell everyone a little bit about, before we end here this interview, tell everyone maybe a little bit about your own background, who you studied with, what your influences are, and just anything else you want to say before we cap it off.
Ooh, okay. well, I think, you know, I started off as a kid playing in the woods, mixing perfumes and potions. And then I went on to study environmental science, where I studied organic chemistry and restoring native wetlands. And really from an environmental perspective, that's how I got into herbalism. And then after, you know, I realized after working on the restoration piece and joining a lot of earth advocacy groups that the problem's not with the earth, but with the people not understanding the value of the earth. So then I started going into holistic medicine. I graduated from University of North Carolina, Asheville with a degree in interdisciplinary studies. And I went on to get my, that was my undergrad. And then I got my master's from the Maryland University of Integrative Health. It was then called Thai Sophia. But my teachers there, you know, I had such a great blend of teachers, really scientific minds, like Simon Mills from the UK and Kevin Spellman, who is like a chemistry genius. He's also an Ayurvedic practitioner, studied with Dr. Vasant Lad. Matthew Prisco, medicine maker from Galen's Way out in California. So I had a really wonderful, diverse variety of teachers in that 3-year full-time master's level program. And then after that, I went on to study with Matthew Wood pretty intensively because I liked his energetics. I liked the way he spoke about the plants and his personal experience working with drop dose medicine. And he has had amazing, he's done such amazing work herbally with just using that method. And I've got a lot of herbalists in my basket.
David Duke comes to mind.
Jim Duke, Margie Flint, Rosemary Gladstar is like, I've only done one herb walk with her, but it was amazing. So, you know, I have shelves of herbal books and people who I just adore. Yeah. And yeah, I just feel really grateful that I've had that blend of the science and the energetic herbalism and the traditional herbalist perspective as well. And I try my best to blend them together and to give everyone a really diverse yet integrated herbal studying experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You get that. That is exactly what you'll get if you sign up for Ashley's program, which I encourage you to do. If this is the kind of thing that interests you, you won't regret it. It's a fantastic course with someone I absolutely love, obviously, but also like a really, truly fantastic human being and teacher of plant medicine. And if you want to learn more about her, see her work, get to know her a little bit, check out her YouTube channel, Skyhouse Herbs, where she publishes weekly on plant medicine, plant energetics, and also on Instagram, which is Skyhouse Herbs. So the apprenticeship program starts April 24th. I wanted to get Ashley on, brag about her program, turn you guys on to it. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm sure that we're going to see some people from the Nightlight astrology world getting introduced to you and all of your magic.
I would love that. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.